Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is presented by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. Have you heard the news? Wisconsin.Golf is now under the umbrella of the WSGA. That's right. If you want to get involved in Wisconsin.Golf as an advertiser, a partner, or a sponsor, feel free to reach out to Rob Jansen at the WSGA at rob@wsga.org. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. I am fresh off the golf course, folks. No, I wasn't playing today, but I was out watching a couple of golfers with Wisconsin ties at the Waste Management Phoenix Open Monday qualifier. And Gary D'Amato, Thomas Longbella came oh so close to getting through to the what do they call it? The People's Open, I guess, is what we're calling it down here in the Valley of the Sun. He shoots a 400 par 67 today with a birdie on the final hole, and it looks like he's going to miss by two, maybe three, depending. A couple guys on the course that turned in four under. So I tell you, Thomas Longbella, he's getting used to these qualifiers where you've got to, you know, get low and stay low.
He's right on the verge. Yeah, he is, Rob. But was he, when you talked to him, was he more discouraged or encouraged by what he did today?
I think he was very encouraged because, you know, he also, you know, there were a number of putts that he missed. His caddy told me down the stretch before he birdied nine, I watched him, the putt on number eight. It looked like it was going to, you know, die right in the hole, and it just stayed out to the right. And, so there was one, and apparently either on six or seven, he had another one that was very makeable. So at that point, you know, you're just looking to, you know, try to get in that stratosphere. You don't, you know, there was no live scoring per se. There were nine hole scores posted at the turn. So you really didn't know in real time, you know, how, you know, things looked. I take it they used kind of old fashioned scorecards, and because they had two scoring areas at the end. But you look at the Patton Kizzire, a PGA Tour player, a veteran who was lost his status and had to go through the Monday qualifier to get in this week. Was one of the 64s that were shot today, and his back nine card: birdie, birdie, par, birdie, eagle, birdie, and he had two birdies and a bogey on the front nine. And that's, you know, kind of you know, what you got to do to be able to get through. The other guy that's at 7-under right now, Gary, is Niccolo Galletti out of Phoenix, although I saw something on the Monday Q info Twitter feed that he was John Rahm's roommate at Arizona State, and he was a bogey-free 64 with four birdies on the front, or I'm sorry, in the back, and three birdies on the front. You know, that's just the way it is every week. And this week, because it's a somewhat full field event, they've got, I think, 132 players in the final field, which is just enough to get around the course between sunrise and sunset with where we're at in the year. So they only have three instead of four qualifiers into the main draw. So you even had, you know, one fewer opportunity. But, you know, Thomas looked pretty solid. You know, he was probably a little more erratic than our other local, and we have adopted Max Schwarz, who spent a year at the University of Wisconsin after spending 3 years down at Emory University, Division III school in Georgia. You know, the six or seven holes that I watched Max, he was seemingly right down the middle of the fairway on every hole. Again, he just couldn't get any putts to go until he made a birdie putt on the next to last, and he shot 74. So it's not going to look like a great day for him, but he shot 65 to get in a week ago down at McCormick Ranch in much different conditions. They played this at Pinnacle Peak Country Club, and it was very much a country club like, you know, fast greens. I don't want to say the rough was, you know, all that bad, but it's Dorma Bermuda. They didn't overseed it, you know, and it's a solid layout, you know, enough undulations in the greens and enough elevation changes to make club selection, you know, something. And then we had wind again, Gary, which we, you know, getting a little bit more of down here. It was about 15 or 20 miles an hour to start out, and then it kind of died down a little bit. But no, it was a good solid showing for Thomas, and we'll see where it takes him from here. I did get you're probably wondering about this whole Q School final. what does it get you when you don't finish in that top, you know, 70 or whatever it is to get either the PGA Tour status or the Korn Ferry status? I mean, we both don't know, do we?
I have no idea. Did Thomas fill you in?
Well, he said, you know, so he's been chasing the Korn Ferry Monday qualifiers for the Bahamas, and I guess he told me there's a Korn Ferry thing down in Chile that he's actually apparently his number finishing 100th. I forgot that he'd finished 100th on the head at Q School, but he would get in on either on his number or he's close, so he's going to go down there and try to Monday qualify for that.
Wow.
I mean,
wait a second. What? He's going down to Chile to try to Monday qualify?
Yeah, well, it might, it could be one of those Monday Qs that's in the States and then,
okay.
And then you go down. But,
yeah.
Yeah. So what, so they just got done with the Bahama swing. And now I didn't realize this. And maybe this is the way it's been on the Korn Ferry. We haven't had someone on there in a while. But they're going to Bogota, Colombia, Buenos Aires, and then Santiago, Chile, March 7th through the 10th before they come back stateside in April to Savannah, Georgia. That sounds like that PGA Tour Americas tour with the, you know, and apparently he's going to try to play one of those too because it fits with that event down in Chile. But if he's confident if he can get into an event, make a cut, he'll get in the reshuffle, and then he'll be good to go for the rest of the year. So right now it's kind of in limbo. But the only reason he did the one here in Phoenix, Gary, was because he's a ping player, and he came over to get fitted for a couple new clubs and have a couple things you know tweaked on, I think, on a putter. So it was more of a business trip than it was simply, you know, trying to qualify for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Don't get him wrong. He would have played if he had qualified.
He would have played.
Yeah.
Looks like you guys are going to get some weather though, Rob. It's going to be interesting. You know, we had the Pebble Beach postponed to Monday and then canceled, the final round canceled. And that weather, and especially south of there in LA, is sort of moving your way, right? So later in the week could get interesting around you.
Apparently as early as tomorrow, it could get interesting. And then,
okay.
For sure, you know, Wednesday will be a wash. And Wednesday is usually that big pro-am, the one that's featured Aaron Rodgers in the past. I don't know. Haven't seen a guest list for that one. But, and then, you know, it's cooler weather than we're used to. Today we got up to 72, but later in the week, it's supposed to, you know, kind of 50 or 80% chance of rain tomorrow on Tuesday, and then 40% chance the next 3 days, in fact, into Saturday. So it could be a rare wet, if it's raining on Saturday at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, I can't wait to see how the crowd behaves, Gary.
Yeah.
Because that's the day that everybody gets there at, you know, 4 a.m. to get, I think the gates open at 6 or something, and that's the day of the mad dash to 16. And I've never done it. I've been there after they've made the dash and seen the stands filled, but I can only imagine the amount of alcohol that's consumed between 6 a.m. and the time the leaders come by about 3:30 or 4 o'clock.
Yeah, a lot of them could be slipping in on wet grass on their way to get to those coveted seats on the 16th hole.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who does some marshalling on the 18th hole, and I said, you know, the first time I went there, I couldn't believe they'll be slipping, Gary, because there is a segment of the patrons, and I use that word loosely here, who show up in high heels, and you know, rather you know, dressed up dresses. I mean, like, you know, like the Waste Management's the first stop on a big day of activity. I mean, it is like, you know, it's a tradition unlike any other, simply because you've got, you know, men that dress up crazy, you know, in costumes and women to a degree, but then you've also got women who, you know, get really dressed up to do this. I don't see anybody in a three-piece suit coming to the Waste Management on the guy's side, but I see a lot of fancy dresses, and and the like on the women's side. So it really is an event. It is the social event of the season, Gary, down here in the Phoenix area.
Yeah, you've experienced it, I know, a couple times. You know, that's something that's on my bucket list, Rob. I definitely want to get to the Waste Management Phoenix Open someday and take in that site on the 16th hole. My son and I have talked about making a sort of a pilgrimage out, and so maybe next year we'll come out and join you and watch the shenanigans on 16.
Yeah, you might want to either leave your clubs at home or take out a second mortgage, though, because the green around here. I mean, I'm on this Arizona golf group, and I can't remember which course it was. Oh, it was the course where they played the NCAA championship last spring, talking about $500 green fees for the week.
Wow! And all the courses are getting inflated rates, right, during this week.
Yeah, and beyond, and it'll stick pretty much all the way through spring training. In fact, when I talked to Max Schwarz, who's from Paradise Valley, he was saying that, he probably practices more than he plays this time of year, simply because, you know, except for, you know, being at his home course, you know, he really can't afford to go out much. I mean, I think they gave him $70 green fees at the course today. Pinnacle Peak, the other courses are all, you know, TPC Scottsdale before it closed. Both the course, the stadium course is the course they play, and then the Champions course, which is the one they had the Senior Tour finals of the Q School, and is a kind of a more has a little more character to it. It's $500-$600, and that's. Isn't that kind of what we're getting at Whistling Straits this summer, Gary?
Yeah, I think Whistling Straits is $550, not counting the caddy. That's up there. And then, you know, we've got Erin Hills and Sand Valley that are in the 200 to 300 range. So golf at some of these upscale public courses is getting very expensive. But you know what, Rob? The tee sheets are filled.
Yeah.
Erin Hills doesn't have many. Sand Valley doesn't have many openings. Whistling Straits is chock full every day. People are paying these rates. It's beyond me. I mean, Grant Park for, $24 is more my speed, but people are paying the money to play these courses.
So, review at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and I'll have a story up on the site tomorrow. Thomas Longbella, a 467, Max Schwarz, the former Badger, a 374. So they miss, by just a couple of shots. And it is right now Peyton Kizzire and Nicolo Gaetti with 64s, and Noah Hoffman of Phoenix with a 65. And we'll see if those hold up. But pretty much, and now we've got another 64. So it's going to be right now someone's going to have to go low and hope that they get at least a shot at a playoff, if not bump the co-leaders. Jacob Bridgman of Inman, South Carolina, is currently the other golfer at 7-under. So 7-under, that's a lot of birdies, Gary.
Yeah, it's just think about it. You go into these one-day qualifiers, and usually they're four spotters, but this one was a three-spotter, right?
No, three-spotter.
Only
right.
Three. Yeah, and you know you've got to – birdie every other hole practically just to have a shot to get in. I mean, it's so much pressure on these guys. It's crazy that, and then they can go out and do it. I mean, Thomas just missed by a couple of shots. And you're standing on the tee and you're standing in the fairway and on the green, pretty much knowing you have to birdie that hole. It's a tough task.
So one final, note from the open qualifier today, I ran into Steve Dalby, the, former Menominee, high school great, and also UW Stout golfer for a while. Spent a couple years there. Started on his professional career at a very young age, and now is the teaching professional over at Phoenix Country Club, which is the home of the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. And I didn't realize until today that he tutors Steve Allen, who has been, before we came on the air, I stumped Gary D'Amato. He was a Greater Milwaukee Open runner-up back in 2003, and finished fourth, I believe it was, at the PGA Tour Champions Q School last fall. And so he will have status on the senior circuit this year. He just turned 50 this month, and he will make his debut down at the Chubb Classic next week in Florida. Yeah, Steve Allen with a 66 today, Gary. And, you know, this is a guy who, like I said, was very loyal to the Greater Milwaukee Open, played several times, and six, according to the GMO Bible, with that runner-up finish in 2003. And we discerned it was one of the Kenny Perry victories.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture Steve. I'm sure we talked to him back then, Rob.
Yeah.
And did you see him today? He's a bigger guy, right?
No. This is that you might be thinking I know who you're talking. There was that big.
Maybe I'm thinking of Michael Allen.
Might be Michael Allen, or it might be Steve Lowry too.
Yeah.
Bigger guy.
Yeah.
But Steve Allen reminds me a lot of. Gosh. He's not very big.
I do not remember him.
You know what? He's built a lot like Stephen Elker, although he's got about a Stephen Elker build with maybe I don't want to, you know, and I don't say this critically, but like a Ralph Melf type of you know, smiling face, not redheaded polka dots, you know, or freckles, but you know, just a friendly guy. And since I moved out here in 2016 between California and Arizona, he's been at almost every Monday qualifier that I've covered, and then was also at, he would get to the second stage of Corn Ferry Tour qualifying, over at Bear Creek. So, I mean, every time Neil Johnson or Dan Woltman was in a field, it felt like Steve Allen was also there. And because he's, I don't know how long he's not had status on the PGA Tour, but it's apparently been a while, because all he does is go to qualifiers and he doesn't always get through, but boy, his name is always up there. I really am excited to see what he might do this year on the PGA Tour Champions. I hope, he is able to get a spot in the, AmFam Championship, just based on his success in Wisconsin. He had a T13 in 2007 at the GMO, a T29 besides that runner-up finish, and just six starts. So I think he's going to do great things. And it was neat to see Steve Dalby again, and it was also neat to see a guy who just turned 50 and Steve Allen be able to throw up a number in a PGA Tour qualifier that Ryan French of Monday Q Info calls the Super Bowl of Monday qualifiers.
Yeah, I wish I remembered Steve Allen, and we interviewed everybody back then, Rob. Anyone who finished in the top four or five, certainly we talked to, and I'll be darned if I can remember him at all. But that was 20 years ago too. So,
and not only do we talk to him, but we talked to those guys. Remember when they were bringing everybody in the interview room? There was no flash area. And they'd
bring
it in your room, and there were, I'm not going to name names, but there were certain people in the fourth estate that would sometimes try to pry the entire life story out of a guy. So it wasn't like they're just there for 2 minutes; they were up there for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, if he makes it over to the AmFam this year, I'll have to get reacquainted.
Yeah, I think so. And a neat link to Wisconsin with his teacher being Steve Dalby, and of course, I want to ask him, and if I don't get a chance to ask him, Gary, you ask him. Ask him if he's counted up how many Monday qualifiers he's played since he lost status on the PGA Tour. I mean, it's got to be in the – if we've got 50, let's say 50 events a year, 40. I mean, they don't play every week with a qualifier. I mean, there's got to be, 200-300 qualifiers.
Well, he must have a rich uncle who's paying his way into these things, because that's that adds up quick, I think, the entry fees, right?
I think so. Although if you're a veteran member, you get either a deep discount not every veteran member would be able to play in a Monday queue, because then they'd all play.
Yeah.
So I bet you if it's let me see here. There's got to be there's an entry fee on this scoring area. Let me see it's $100 Oh my gosh. Oh, it's no fee for a current PGA Tour member. Former PGA Tour member since 2020. It's 500. Ooh. And, huh.
He's paying something.
PGA Tour Champions Tour regular member, $100. So I guess that gets him in. I wonder how he paid for, how did he, maybe I saw him in a lot of pre-qualifiers then.
Does he have a caddy too, or is he hoofing it and carrying his own bag? Or
he had a caddy. There was only one group. There was so the group that Max Schwarz played in had a guy who is the outside bag attendant, or at the golf course where they played today, and they had quite a gallery. And of course, Max pushed his clubs on a push cart, and then the other two guys had caddies. And then everybody had a caddy, and there were a few people following every single group. And then it was the group right before Thomas Longbella. It was, speaking of PGA Tour veterans, it was Ricky Barnes and Michael wow. Feierstein of San Diego. Michael's been on and off the tour, but Ricky, had a pretty, sustained career for a while back, maybe about 10, 15 years ago. They were the only two guys in their group. Neither guy had a caddy, and they had nobody following them. It was like somebody had snuck on the course, and they were just playing in this qualifier. But anybody who played in a twosome, that meant that somebody WD'd. And in Longbella, Thomas's case, he played with a guy named Chan Kim out of Gilbert, Arizona, and they played as a twosome because Pearson Cootie withdrew. He's like the third or fourth alternate to get in the field. And he might have been told that his number will be up. Maybe your time you better spend, especially with the weather, over at TPC Scottsdale. So, Parker,
interesting.
The brothers were both on the University of Texas team, and Parker, I think, shot 67 as well and missed by a few. But it was every other group. Esteban Toledo was in a group, and then two groups later, it was Billy Mayfair. Billy Mayfair.
Wow.
Billy did not have a good day today. I think he shot 79.
Interesting. Yeah. Esteban Toledo, huh?
Yeah.
So there were some Champions Tour guys in this.
There were.
Billy Mayfair. Esteban.
Tom Pernice, I think, was in the field. When you don't have events every week at this time of year out there. I see. Bo Van Pelt, another former GMO. Wasn't he the last GMO champ?
I believe he was, yeah, 2009.
He was in the field. Kelly Kraft, I see, just put up a 67, and he'll miss by a couple as well. Actually, a 66. But let's see if I can find out where Bo Van Pelt. Bo Van Pelt with a 74. So it was not a good day for all for former GMO champs.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're a former GMO champ, you're probably not a young former GMO champ.
No, that's the last one was what four going on 15 years ago. So, if you won it at 35, you are now Champions Tour eligible.
Yeah.
Which probably Bo is very close, I'm sure.
That's right. Yes. Yes. And I wanted to segue from my Steve Allen conversation with you, Gary, to something you had in Sweet Spot, because it really, it surprised me when I heard it last week. And that was the news that Bernhard Langer, tore his Achilles tendon, and he will be out of action for a while. I would not anticipate an Aaron Rodgers like recovery from at his age, but this is a guy that, again, this is the catch 22 of being able to compete in your sport until basically you can't. And Bernhard has always been a fit guy, and from what I'm told or what I read, he was working out and tore the Achilles tendon down in Boca Raton, and you wrote today that that recovery time is typically 4 to 6 months. So that could keep him. Well, what would that be? To this, yeah, that would be right on the AmFam Championship borderline.
Yeah, and I think that probably is the typical recovery time for someone who's younger. And mm-hmm. Bernhard is going to be 67 in August. I would guess that he would be on the longer end of that recovery time, but I wouldn't put anything past him because he's a remarkable human being, obviously. And, it's possible he could be ready for AmFam, but he's only I was surprised when I looked up his playing, you know, in Madison, he's only played at University Ridge four times, Rob, and with the best finish of a tie for 10th.
Yeah.
So maybe the course doesn't suit him or, right. you know, for some reason, or it's where it falls in the schedule, you know, amongst a bunch of majors that he takes that week off. But, so will we see him at the AmFam, even if he's healthy, maybe not. But, yeah, this puts a crimp on everything. I mean, he was going to be playing in his last Masters, as the two-time champion. And I'm sure he'll show up at Augusta National in a boot, but he obviously won't be playing. And then, you know, the U.S. Senior Open, he's the defending champion, won at Central World last year. And it looks really iffy, if not unlikely, that, he won't be able to defend his title. So it's sad. It's too bad for Bernhard.
And you also mentioned, too, that Steve Stricker is committed to the Gallery Classic at Mission Hills Country Club in Rancho Mirage, where he competed for the football. It was the first-year event last year. And anyone who's watched Steve play at the Mitsubishi Electric Championship at Hawaii saw that Gallery is one of the two sponsors now on his polo. And last year he was sponsor-free on the lapels. Everything was on the collar and on the hat. I looked it up at one point to see what Gallery was, but multi-cancer early detection, somewhat in the vein of a Cologuard, but I think for a lot of different cancers. So what a good cause, and I see Julie Inkster is also an ambassador for that company. You can't ask for two more upstanding individuals than Steve Stricker and Julie Inkster.
No, that's for sure, Rob. Yeah, two great ambassadors. Any company would be lucky to have them as brand ambassadors and spokespersons for those companies.
And the guy I'm doing this podcast with went for the page views in the sweet spot today because it led off with Paige Sporanic. And, of course, Paige Sporanic, with the help of Jerry Kelly, knocked it out of the park during our page view count the last June. And now you're telling me that she has a quote unquote secret crush on the state of Wisconsin. Gary D'Amato, you're making this shit up. I mean, yeah. Can I say that on a podcast?
7 second delay, seven second delay. That was good, Rob. Paige is a solid gold when it comes to quote page views, unquote. And, so anytime we get news from Paige, we're glad to put it in a sweet spot because really she does love Wisconsin. She teasingly said she might think about moving here someday. And I said the sweet spot would not object if she made that decision. But yeah, she's been in our state a number of times in the last couple of years, always very popular, popular draw with Jerry Kelly last year in Beauty and the Beast at Geneva National. And then she's been a hit at Brewers game, Rob. She's thrown out first pitch is twice. Brewers are 2-0 in those games, and I'm sure they'll want her back at some point too.
She should be the pitching coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the third base coach. Could you imagine? You know, her. I'd rather see her waving somebody around third than the guys they've had. Of course, you know, that's assuming they get someone. They score any runs, but. That's a conversation for a different podcast. If she did move to Wisconsin, Gary, where would you suggest? And I don't think Dee Dee would appreciate you saying Caledonia, Wisconsin. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think there's a house for sale on my block, Rob. So no, I could see her definitely moving in the Lake Geneva area. A lot of nice places to live around there, and she's felt at home at certainly on the player course at Geneva National last year, shooting a 6 under par 66. In that charity event. So that would be see her boating out on the lake would be fun.
Well, you know, Jim Rome's got a place up in Eagle River, you know.
Yeah.
Could she fit in the Northwoods or, I don't know about Door County. I think she'd find Door County a little bit remote, you know, not a lot of, when you come from the, I think is she down here in Arizona?
I believe she is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got as I found out today, going one route to get to the golf course and another route coming home. There's a lot of every nook and cranny of this town has got shopping centers around it. So you don't have to go far to find your Safeway or your Fry's or whatever, wherever you shop at Target. And Door County, you got it. You know, of course, I mean, she'd find a way to get the stuff she likes. I mean, there's enough, you know, mom and pop markets and, you know, what, roadside stands. I think she'd find it attractive up there.
Yeah, I picture her being more of a city girl, Rob. I see her, you know, living somewhere around Milwaukee or, you know, what are we speculating about? She's never going to move to Wisconsin, Rob.
All right, all right.
But it would be fun.
Well, I just want, Gary, I want us to be ready in case we get asked to provide advice because you have so graciously, you know, conveyed this news about her, her, you know, her love for the state. I thought maybe that, you know, we'd be leaned on for some advice. But so we're halfway into the talking.golf, maybe past halfway. And Gary, a couple other things on the website here. Part of our partnership with the Wisconsin State Golf Association is the fact that we have some great stuff from individuals that you normally have read in the Wisconsin Golfer magazine, namely Caitlin Moyer and Rick Platel. And Rick was a busy guy this week, wrote a lot about the updates to the World Handicap System in 2024. And as we talked about last week, my course down here had more rounds inputted into gin than any other course in the country. But this year that may change because there are changes that have been implemented to allow rounds from shorter courses and nine-hole rounds. That's always been the conundrum, Gary, when I'm playing nine holes. They want me to input it, and then they used to pair it up with another round. Now apparently they're not going to pair it up. I'm just keep putting my scores in, and then if it's nine holes, then they can make the determination as to how they score that.
Yeah, that sounds like the thing. That's the thing to do. Obviously, just keep putting your scores in and let Jen figure it out. And I'll be honest, Rob, I skimmed through the story, but I don't know all the nooks and crannies of what's going to transpire here with the USGA changing some of the rules on recording those scores and using them for handicap purposes. But I think the thing is just keep putting your scores in and it'll take care of itself.
The changes aside, do you even understand how your handicap is calculated in the current system?
I do not. I'll admit, Rob, I am totally illiterate when it comes to how gin is calculated. All I know is my handicap keeps going up, so something's wrong with gin, I would say, or something's wrong with me, one of the two.
So when the club championship down here started, I was a 6.5.
Holy cow, Rob. You're a player.
Well, and they automatically input your scores from, you know, because we score them in Genius. I shot 77 in the first round, and then I careered it on Saturday and shot 73, and my handicap is now at a 7-1.
You shot 73, Rob?
I shot 73. No, Gary, the headline here is my handicap went up after shooting a 73.
Yeah, that's how
does
that
happen? I mean, I'm not complaining because once I get back to the little, you know, bingo bango bongo games that we play, that might actually
you're
help.
You're a sandbagger.
Well, I that's
it's not your fault.
No, I'm blaming the gin, and I'm not. I don't know. I don't get it. But yeah, I had a good week. But there's still one more round to go. I've figured something out with putting. I've played in enough scrambles since October, four of them, and where, you know, we spend so much time reading putts and four people do it. Everybody has input, and we actually take the time to do it. I've never taken time to read a putt. I look at that line and I say, and that's been part of my problem with my golf my entire career is let's just get it done. And so I've taken something that my daughter's college coach, Howie Sam, taught her at UW Stout, and that's to find that point in the putt where it starts breaking towards the hole and aim for that spot. And the other day, I mean, I was and again yesterday playing with friends from the White Tees I made some obscene amount of putts that I've never you played with me. Have I ever made a putt in your presence? I don't think so.
You haven't made many long ones, I will say that, Rob. You're pretty good on the short ones, but so you're saying you Wyndham Clarked it, huh? You made a mile's worth of putts?
I made a mile, yes, yeah. And it's like my conversation with Thomas Longbella about having to go to these qualifiers and shooting, you know, 64s to get through. I mean, it's got to be fun when you trust your game enough to go out and be able to do that. I told him it looked like he was trying to birdie every hole, you know, and on these kind of qualifying courses, I mean, it's one thing, you can't go to Augusta National thinking you're going to birdie every hole. Okay. You can't go to Pebble Beach thinking you're going to birdie every hole. There are some holes, and then each day the hole locations dictate what you can and can't do. But on a fairly average course setup, you know, there, some people obviously go about it that way. I don't think I can birdie every hole, Gary, but now at least I can see. What I've been doing is I've been saving a lot of pars because I've made putts that are longer than normal to save them. And because I'm seeing that hole, but boy, you know, I've told many people, if I only listen to Discount Dave Andrews, who was the longtime pro at Merrill Hills, but once upon a time, my pro up at Bullseye at a young age, I might've actually been able to, you know, win more prizes at these outings.
Wow. So you're actually taking some time over putts now, Rob, and you're studying the line and it's paying off.
I'm walking off putt, Gary. I'm walking the length of a putt.
Wow. Wow. That's big, Rob.
I'm trying to pad my step numbers. That's what I'm really trying to do. But,
yeah. Well, if you start using aim point, then we'll know you've gone off the deep end.
I might be doing this with my, I'm not straddling the line thing, but I am the putter trying to find the aim point part with the holding of the putter. From what I've been able to discern watching other people do it, is you hold that putter out in front of you, and you think to what you think is the line, and when you see that straightness when it looks straight, and then you see the break off the right, you know, right or left off of that line, that's the aim point. Does that make
interesting?
Sense?
You know, now, I remember watching Mark Bumowski use. He was a plumb bobber, and I never understood how plumb bob worked either.
No.
Some guys swore by it, but other guys, you know, I know a lot of guys who tried it and just said, I just can't figure this out. But Mark used it to great effect and won a lot of tournaments plumb bobbing.
Isn't that amazing? We've gone from that was a vertical line.
Yeah, closing one eye.
And the aim point is more of a horizontal, parallel with the ground.
Yeah.
Holding the putter out. And then don't get me started on the whole, you know, walking down the line, you know, like you're Laurel and Hardy, and you know, yeah. So So it's been good. But going back to read Rick's story to find out what's happening here with the shorter courses. And then there's another thing in the graphic didn't make the headline. Thank goodness, or we really have been confusing everybody. The 10 through 17 hole scores. You know, I've been putting my hole by hole scores in. Since Gin became an app and sponsored by Century Insurance, by the way, and and apparently now that's almost required to do hole by hole. At least I do stats too, like fairways and greens, and apparently now the 10th through the 17th hole means something. I don't know what, but a use of the score differential applies when 10 through 17 are played. Oh, so that's why my handicap went up, because the course that we played on Saturday was the Easy East course. Nobody got any shots in our group except one guy got one shot. So Jim tells you that if I was a 6.5, apparently I was supposed to shoot a 69, and then my handicap wouldn't have gone down. We had one guy shoot a 68, too, from these.
Wow.
I'd have to look to see what – I think we're at like 5,900 yards. And let me see here. I got the blue white.
You're running some pretty good circles, Rob. Guys are shooting 68 and 69 in your group.
A lot of people who do two things, Gary. They play every day and they practice. Okay. Now I'm playing more than I have in the past, but I don't practice. I Carlos Franco my game. me no practice. Me wave to the people. I wave to the people practicing as I go to the clubhouse. So.
Yeah, and then go out and win.
Go out and win. Carlos. What, multiple GMOs?
Yeah.
Boy, if we got a dollar for every time we said Greater Milwaukee Open in this podcast, Gary, we'd be rich. So the other thing that Rick was working on that was really interested in this, the WPGA hands out awards every year to its members in a number of really deserving categories that reflect the work of that association and the depth of that work. And the most prestigious award is the Golf Professional of the Year. And this year, for the second time, it went to Bill Graham, the head professional at Shaniqua Country Club in Heartland. And, you know, Bill didn't think when he went from the north side of Chicago as an assistant professional to Shaniqua in the year 2000 that he would be here almost 25 years later. But Gary D'Amato, he is, and I think that speaks to really what a quality club Shaniqua is. I think anybody who's familiar with it's a rather exclusive club in the Milwaukee suburbs, and it is one that a lot of people hold in high regard as a course and the condition that it's in. But, you know, the members that are there, you know, are great, upstanding, you know, people. Obviously, they're treating their employees right if their head professional is in his 25th year in a profession where we aren't seeing many people last more than 10 or 15, and that's a lot.
Yeah, I've gotten to know Bill a little bit through I just came off the board. I was the at-large member of the WPGA board for 4 years, Rob, and Bill was on the board. Got to know him a little bit. Quality guy, pro's pro. I love, you know, that saying, he's a pro's pro, but he definitely is. Great demeanor for a club professional. I can see why he's so popular at Shaniqua. And speaking of Shaniqua, Rob, I got to throw this in. I played one round of golf in my life with the estimable Tom Oates, and it was at Shaniqua Country Club. Me and Oatesy at Shaniqua.
Wait a second here. I just got done talking about what an upstanding golf club Shaniqua is. And you're telling me you and the legendary State Journal columnist Tom Oates played Shaniqua? That's the only time you played with Oatesy?
That is the only time I've ever played a round of golf with Oatesy. Yeah, we played with Carl Meyer, whose son Drew was the punter for the Badgers. And so he had Oatesy out there and me out there, and we had a fun day. And it's a great course. It's a lot of fun to play, too. Beautiful course.
Now, did you get Oatesy in that group, or did he get you in that group?
I think Carl called us both and just asked us if we wanted to play together. At first I said no, and then I thought, well, I'll let him tag along. No, he was fun to play with. He's got more game than I thought he would have, Rob. Let's put it that way.
He takes it seriously. And yeah, his wife Kathy plays, and I think when they get away to the Northwoods, they play a lot. You know, kind of Stricker-esque, you know, retire to the Northwoods. But, okay. Drew Meyer, I was always impressed with him as a punter at UW. But his dad, I'm inviting you two guys along. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what got into him, but we were thankful. We had a good day. But, getting back to Bill, yeah, real quality guy. And, no surprise at all that he was named Golf Professional of the Year for a second time. Really happy for him.
Quality guy, but apparently he was off the day that Gary and Oatesy played it.
Yeah.
So, because they allowed that to happen. Gunnar was named the Assistant Golf Professional of the Year. Gunnar works up at Hidden Glen Golf Club in Cedarburg. They had the 36-hole U.S. Amateur qualifying up there last year. And among the things that Gunnar was lauded for, in addition to head pro Kevin Cramp, the ladies' three-hole league and the junior golf program grew substantially last year, and they organized an under-17 team for a league play in the PGA Junior League competition. You know, the clubs around Wisconsin, Gary, have really gotten behind this PGA Junior League, and you know, normally it's a kind of a feeder thing, and by the time these kids get to a certain age and they're playing their own individual tournaments, there might not be enough time for junior league competition. So to have a U-17 team says a lot there. And, again, junior golf is the future of these clubs. And nice to see that that Gunnar was recognized for his efforts in helping Kevin Cramp, really manage all those, constituencies, if you, for lack of a better word, ladies, juniors. I mean, you know, and of course, there's, I'm sure, ample number of men's leagues. So kudos to Gunnar. I haven't met Gunnar, but have you?
I have not. No, I do not know Gunnar at all. Hopefully we'll run into him at a few events this year. Like to get to know him.
And then David Roche, Teacher Coach of the Year. And this is the fourth time he's won the award. First time since 2018. But I tell you what, again, if I had a dollar for every time someone said they've gone to see David Roche, especially at this time of year. And David does a wonderful job on social media, especially Instagram, of not really lifting up the individuals that he's tutoring, but the work that they're doing. And I'm always fascinated by what, you know, these kids that, you know, I wind up writing about at the, in their high school seasons, but then again in the summer, you know, how they get to that and, you know, just some of the things they're working on, trying to develop club head speed, trying to, you know, develop consistency with swings. You know, and David really has become kind of the guru, and no surprise there that he gets the Teacher of the Year award.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of being able to watch David work a couple times. I saw him give a lesson at Storms a few years back, and he's actually one time when he used to be at the Curry Park Dome years and years ago, I saw him for a lesson and learned a lot about my swing and all the things I did wrong. And but really a really good teacher, and really able to communicate his ideas to the student, to the pupil. That's a special quality, because when you're a golf instructor, you're a teacher, right? And you have to be able to get your students to understand your philosophies and what you're trying to do with their swings. And he's very, very good at that, at explaining what it is about a swing that works, especially for a particular individual.
And we'll again direct you to the story on Wisconsin.golf, but two more I just wanted to mention too. Jonathan Stewart, the director of golf up at Sand Valley, wins the Bill Strasburg Award. That award is gone to goes to the professional who is recognized for his efforts to mentor fellow professionals to improve their employment situations and continuing contributions to professional education. You know, you think of Jonathan's role up there at Sand Valley, and with every course that comes on board, you know, there's more personnel, there's more need to, you know, do whatever can be done to retain that personnel, to build that continuity in a resort that now has, well, by the end of this year, we'll have four championship courses and a 17-hole par 3 course, all of which are you know, held to an extremely high standard. I tell you, Jonathan Stewart deserves it, not only a pat on the back for winning the Bill Strasburg Award, but for now, I think, what, the second or third year that he's been up at Sand Valley, and he seems to be doing a great job up there.
Yeah, his staff is going to continue to grow, obviously, this year, Rob, with Sedge Valley, Tom Doak's course coming on board. You know, the Lido Open last year, as you mentioned, four courses. They're not done up there. You know, there's going to be six, seven, eight courses up there before they slow down, I think. So Jonathan's going to have more and more golf professionals working under him, and you know, helping advance assistant professionals also into number one jobs at other places. So it's the other golf professionals in the state hold the Bill Strasburg winner in high regard. So congratulations to Stewart.
And you know, all these individuals are you know, good people that won their awards. And again, I really encourage you to go over and take a look at you know, who's been identified as, you know, kind of the movers and shakers in the WPGA section. One guy though that I think flies under the radar in a big way was recognized for the PGA Professional Development Award, and that's Scott Kennedy. He lives in Prairie du Chien, but he runs the golf course management program at Southwest Wisconsin Tech in Fenimore, and he's done that for a number of years. And Gary, it's a cool program because it's essentially it's a two-year program. It's a tech program. The kids that go through that, they can go right into the golf industry with that degree, or they can also use it to go to PGM programs. I know they've had a partnership with the one at the University of Nebraska, or the Golf Enterprise Management Program at UW-Stout. And Scott's been behind that. He's also coached a very competitive team down there at Southwest Tech. And, you know, I think they work with the local course, Hickory Grove and Fenimore, on some things as well. It's really it's stunning that a program can thrive under his leadership in a community as small as Fenimore. But it's, you think about where it's located, kind of, you know, pulls from Dubuque, pulls from Madison, and pulls from a lot of the small towns around Fenimore. And it really warmed my heart to see Scott Kennedy recognized by the section this year.
Yeah. Yeah. All these awards, Rob, I, you know, having sat on the committee that votes for these awards and picks the winners, I can tell you that a lot of thought is put into these, the resumes that these guys turn in, these and women are, I mean, they're very, very thorough resumes. And then you go through a process of narrowing it down to finalists. And then picking winners, it's always hard. There's always two or three people who are deserving in every one of these categories. It's hard to pick a winner, but all of them, including Scott, are very deserving this year.
Gary, I think we've run past our allotted time, but last.
That's my bedtime, Rob.
Is it midnight by you yet?
not quite.
We would be remiss if we didn't recognize the fact that the college golf season did begin in earnest. It began with an individual event over the weekend that featured a couple of the men from the University of Wisconsin golf team. But the first team event started today down at Boca Raton, Florida, the FAU Paradise Invitational. And the University of Wisconsin, with a real solid showing, a 36-hole opener down there at Osprey Point Golf Club. And after a 294 in the morning session, they bounce back with a 283, second lowest round of the afternoon, and they move up three spots into fifth place. Truly a team effort. Carly Carter, who led the way, was one of the leaders in the morning session, shot a 71 along with Vanessa Ho, struggled in the afternoon to a 77, but both Vanessa Ho shot her second straight 71 in the afternoon. And then Ava Soleil, the former Division II state high school champion from Prescott, after struggling to an 81 in the morning, she bounces back with a 72 in the afternoon. And to help out the team there, they were led in the afternoon by Chloe Chan with a 400 par 68. So a 283, I think a really positive opening day for Todd Erlein's team down there in Florida.
That's a great score. That's a really good start to the spring season. And I know the Marquette and Wisconsin men's teams both are in action, I believe, this coming weekend in the Puerto Rico Classic. So, yeah, college golf in full swing now again.
And one other tournament going on involving Wisconsin golfers, and that's the Texas State Invitational, where Rachel Coughlin out of Wauwatosa, can you believe it? She's a senior already, Gary.
Wow.
That means her dad Jason's getting really old. Rachel is has back-to-back, 75 in the morning, 76 in the afternoon, and she is sitting at T14. Her teammate, Ashley Goh, the number one player for the Chippewas, with a 68 in the afternoon. She's currently T2, and Central Michigan sits in a tie for seventh. Loyola, coached by former Franklin coach and former Carthage College coach Brandy Ferdinand, with 315. They currently sit in 11th place, and Cassie Pasuik with an 84 in the afternoon, she is the only Wisconsin golfer in the top five, the starting lineup. But Kate Meyer, the former Middleton golfer, drew a start this week as an individual. She shot 81 this afternoon after an 84 in the morning. Cassie Pasuik, an 81 in the morning. So they are playing down in Texas. I'm going to guess it's windy down there, Gary.
Yeah, it's windy everywhere in the Southwest, it sounds like. The scores, not great scores, but it's early in the season too, right?
It is. I don't know if that wind coming across the country is going to wipe out some of these courses that have opened. I'm told that maybe, just maybe, Evergreen will reopen by the end of the week before it gets cold again. But we've got seven courses up in the northwest part of the state that are already open. And apparently, by the looks of things on social media, they were pretty full this weekend. And there aren't many tee times to fill this time of year because the days are still short. But can you believe that people are playing golf in Wisconsin in February?
I can't believe it, Rob. Yes, I can. It's been unseasonably warm for a long stretch here. We're supposed to have a couple days in the 50s later this week. So, it's great for these courses to get some of that early revenue that you never count on. But when it comes and happens, you're certainly not going to turn away golfers beating down your door on February 10th or 8th to play golf. That's for sure.
But, you know, one thing you can't do, though, at this time of year when you're playing golf in Wisconsin?
What's that?
You can't post the score to the gym system for a handicap.
That's right. That's right.
I think April 1st, I think, is the bewitching day. Because I heard there's a reason for it, but I'm not sure what. But again, you know, if we ever want to confuse anybody, we're just going to start talking handicap.
Yeah. Yeah. Leave me out of that conversation, Rob. I turn in my scores and whatever my handicap is, it is. And that's as much as I know about it.
And the ironic thing is my daughter is in the handicap member services at the Minnesota Golf Association.
Yeah. So
thank God she doesn't listen to this, Gary, because she'd be, poking fun at the handicap system. Yep. That's for sure. Rob Jansen might too. You know, he might actually jump on this thing and educate us so that we
should invite him someday to talk about gin. Yeah, for sure.
As long as it doesn't complicate my ability to you know, win merchandise in the pro shop, I'm fine with it.
That sounds like Rob Hernandez to me.
Yeah, well, you know, it's either you figure things out with your putter and get better, or you try to let your handicap do the work. So
yeah,
you know, it just, you know, sometimes it's where where the division lines fall there in those flights, but. Yeah, that's another story for another day. Gary, anything else that was on your agenda here today that I didn't cover?
I think we covered a lot of ground today, Rob. We covered a lot.
All right. Well, Gary, we'll talk. We'll talk again next week. I promise you, it'll be much shorter.
Okay, sounds good, Rob. Thanks.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, and we are presented by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. If you want to get involved in Wisconsin.Golf as a advertiser, as a partner, as a sponsor, just reach out to Rob Jansen, the executive director of the WSGA, and you can do that via email. It's rob@wsga.org. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.